Welcome to the Real Triathlon Podcast. I'm your host, Garrick Lowen, here with Nicholas Chase and Jackson Lund.
Welcome back to the Real Triathlon Podcast. It is Nick and I today. We just finished up watching the T100 races. Man, I can't get over how stupid of a location and timing it was with the heat and stuff. And they definitely lied about a lot of stuff, like the water temperature. But there's one thing I really can't get over, and it's that Leon's last name is pronounced Chevalier, not Chevalier, Chevalier. It's Chevalier.
Who was saying it wrong? I think Jan. Didn't Jan say it properly?
Jan could say it properly, but he didn't correct anyone for saying it wrong. But yeah. Then no one else could say it right. But you can't blame him. It is a French name. You know, the I does come before the ER. So if you say it in English, Chevalier. But they make it the freaking triathlon talk guys do it too. It's like, dude, he's a big enough name in the sport. You can pronounce his name properly. But anyways, that's my soapbox. It was a good race, man. It was exciting. I really hope Alistair is not injured because I'd like to see him continue racing on the series. But the women's race, I nailed the podium prediction again, or for 1-2, I think. So, yeah.
Dang, man. Well, you must get yourself a dollar for that. I think people still say Jackson Landry also. Like, I've heard that as of Oceanside, someone said it wrong. And I'm not sure how many people spell laundry different than how it's said, or how, you know, how it's spelled versus anyways, a lot of some weird name stuff. So T100, I went into this race a little skeptical, mainly because there's a lot of high notes. I love Jan and Belinda. I think their commentary is freaking awesome. And I love it more than anything when Jan just counters something that Jack says. Even when Jack's right, I just love it when Jan says something.
Jan is so honest.
Yeah,
he just like says what he thinks.
He's like, I don't believe what you said is correct. I'm going to say something different, but whatever happens, happens. But I just love that he calls it. And so I think this T100 was very raw in the sense that everyone was fearing the conditions left and right. And I don't know, like, was it hotter than Miami? I mean, Miami saw a higher level of attrition. I think there was only a few DNFs for men and women, where Miami had like 5 to 6 DNFs per man and woman. So what was the big deal?
I think people came into this race expecting it to be bad, where Miami, they were like, well, this could be bad, but it's early enough in the season. Yeah, I hope it just won't be. And then people just pace this way better than they did in Miami.
Well, the water temperature for sure was brutal, like 86 degrees. Garrick, you seem to think that they were fluffing that number. Why do you say that?
Oh, they lied for sure. Oh, it just happens to be 0.1 degrees Celsius under the legal limit. Like, I don't know where they took that. They must have grabbed one of those ice cold water bottles and like dumped it somewhere. And they had the thermometer right there, and they're like, oh yeah, all right.
So
30.9 degrees Celsius.
So if it was 31 degrees, did they shorten the swim?
I think they shorten the swim, or they just cancel it outright.
It looked brutal. I mean, you could tell on the Aussie exit, men and women alike were just like kind of slugging their way through and just trying to get to the next dive point so they could then again endure another heat session. So that was
tough. it almost seemed like the swim was one of the hottest parts of the race for them, the way guys were getting out of the water, like just meandering to their bikes. I thought the women had more pop in their step than the men did getting to their bikes.
Specifically, let's focus a little bit real quick, kind of run through the proceedings. The women's race swim that splintered heavily. There was definite huge groups, like 3 women got away, and then there was massive groups that were also splintered by quite a lot. And it looked like there was a weird current, like some sighting was just off. Like at one point, even in the first couple hundred meters, someone was going far right. And like even Lucy Charles Barkley went a little bit far left at the first buoy. So it seemed like navigation was a tough one. And there was fucking buoys everywhere. Like, there must have been for the age group. So I was like, I don't know what actual buoys they're going off of, but hopefully they do. And it was clear in the men's race, like, Sam Laidlaw had no idea where he was going.
Yeah, definitely in the men's race, Sam went way off course. I think he was probably sighting to the wrong turn buoy.
Had to be.
Yeah, but in the women's race too, it's there's like two sets that went completely different ways. But in temperatures like that, I think like when you just look at swimming, it really shows like who is an efficient swimmer. Like if you're hyper efficient, flat water conditions, it's warm. If you have easy speed, you're gonna outswim so many more people. Yeah. And we saw that in the women's race specifically because there was just monstrous gaps.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I don't know why there were such big gaps, you know, but either way, going on to the bike course, you know, we knew Race Ranger was there. Like, Race Ranger is on course. And I was a little frustrated with the women's race because the first camera shots I saw of the women's race for the first half of the bike, I saw a lot of red lights and no one was mentioning anything about those red lights. Now, I understand there may have been some leeway on course when climbing or in the 180 degree turnarounds. And they, you know what? They should cover that in the race brief. Like, all right, there's going to be yellow tape in going into the 180, coming out of the 180. There's going to be yellow tape coming into the hill, going out of the hill, where referees are just going to be like, all right, bunch up a little bit, ride the race, stay competitive, but on the straights and the downhills, spread it out, let the gaps form again. And I think that is really what we're missing, I think, in the next endeavor in this whole Race Ranger equation is we know there's going to be points where there's inherently some bunching, and that's not necessarily a drafting advantage. It might just be par for the course, because if everybody's spaced 20 meters going up a hill and has to hit a break coming into it, everybody slows down, you waste energy. It's not racing at that point. It's just managing distance for an arbitrary, you know, not really an advantage while climbing. So I like that idea. But in the men's race, they mentioned it. Did you notice any of those red lights in the women's race?
I didn't notice a lot of it on the women's race. I noticed sometimes there's a blinking red light, but they weren't talking about it. And then they really mentioned it in the men's race, and Jan did hold back. Jan was like, I'll give a shit. He's like, these guys are all freaking drafting right now. He's like, that freaking, and the officials right there, you should be calling it out or at least yelling at them.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was no discussion of that in the women's race. I like your idea of like having a zone where it's like, okay, there's like some obvious natural ebb and flow here. So if you enter the draft zone, you have some leeway to back off at this point, like going into a hill, going in and out of a U-turn, stuff like that, where you're not gaining an advantage from drafting, but it's just a natural ebb and flow of the race.
And I can tell you for sure, like during Oceanside even, and I was maybe close to the, you know, maybe, I don't know if it was the second or third bike pack, but either way, every time we hit a climb, there was meters between wheels with an official the entire time. And I think that it's an unspoken rule, but it's also like they say all the pre-race briefing, they're like, we're going to call penalties if they're, you know, based off of safety, number one, and then obviously based off of unfair advantages. And so I think that they just need to be clear, like, you guys can climb tight, spread it out over the top. And I think we need to be transparent like that to just cut the crap. And then if there's an official there, call some penalties, set an example, and then everyone's going to fall suit. But I think for sure, like, that men's pack was really kind of gambling a little bit. They spread out eventually, which was awesome. But in the early few laps when everyone's fresh and they're kind of just waiting to see who's going to go, there was a lot of, there's those two white, there's a dashed white lines, right? In that kind of, we know the nose to one dash white line to the tail, the other is around 12 or 15 meters even. And there's like barely two for a lot of those athletes, and maybe two and a half. So even three, I think, was about the limit.
Yeah, they were definitely pushing it there. But it did break apart. Yuri Kulin just went through and just smashed the group.
Yeah.
Which was,
yeah. He didn't want to play that game.
No. Which is, it's funny that they talked about it, that like everyone calls him out for drafting all the time. And
Yeah.
then he went to the front and just shattered the whole race apart.
I mean, typically, if everyone's saying it, like you may have been guilty of it more than one offense. Like, we're not pro athletes, aren't ones to just, I guess, ambiguously say things unless we've seen it. So good on him for sending it and just sending that message of like, I want to win this thing. I'm going to win multiples and I'm a wild card. And, you know, maybe he'll get invited back. Who
Yeah.
knows? I don't know. Do they like
He's
invite
leading the series. I hope they invite him back.
him?
But also, like, good on Jan and Belinda for like just saying it. Like, that's something that in so like for our sport and the commentating, they will just never say the drama that's, you know, that happens behind or in the paddock, as they say, and the talk. They like dance around it and they don't say stuff where it's like, no, like guys openly call this guy out for drafting and like they said it on the broadcast and that brings drama and that makes it exciting. And it's like, well, look, maybe he thinks this is complete bullshit. So he just went to the front and showed all of you guys that he can actually ride a freaking bike.
Yeah. And after we talk about T100, I have some ideas on how we can make triathlon interesting. But before we get to that, I want to talk about some of the upsets that I saw. You know, it sucks to see Chelsea Sodaro pull off. Jan was very charismatic in how he said, you know, stay true to the sport, you got to finish it out. He's limped through and walked an entire marathon at Kona. You know, if anybody is probably worthy of being a little bit more of a judge with a gavel on that, it might be him. However, you know, you could tell Chelsea was giving it a good go and that she wasn't getting in response. She was like at 100 RPM going downhill, and it just didn't look like it was going to work on that day. So it's kind of interesting. Like Chelsea Sodaro and Sam Laidlaw, they're kind of athletes in the back of my head who are like, if they're on, they are on and they probably are going to win. But if they have a you know, a splinter in their thumb, it seems like that kind of degenerates their ability to actually show up in the top form. So they're like your first or last kind of athletes that I've always noticed out of most races. They're incredibly strong and talented, but I think mentally that's where they have a little bit of chink in their armor.
Yeah, I never pick Sam on my fantasy just because of that, unless it's like Kona or, you know, the World Champs. But Chelsea, I did pick her. I saw her having like a consistent day, but you're right. Yeah, she just didn't have it, and Jan called her out. I think the way I took Jan's comment was a bit more like the way that she dropped out and kind of like ran to her hotel room, but like that. Maybe she took time to regroup and then she came back the next day and interviewed and Jan said like that was good. But it's true, like sometimes, you know, like you need to just stick it out, finish it. Like it, even if you're not gonna win, just like acknowledge, you know, because when you DNF, when you're a champion and you DNF from a race, you don't allow the people that win that, like, you know, that success of beating you, of being better than you on the day. You kind of take it from them when you do that. And
Well,
yeah, sometimes.
I didn't think of that. I guess that makes sense. Like I've been wanting to beat Sam Laidlaw. So if he DNFs, then I don't get a really fair chance to beat him. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's also like, it brings me to something I've been thinking about even more with this sport. You know, T100 does a good job about highlighting at least the 20 athletes who show up. They don't do it on the broadcast because you still only see three or four athletes the whole time. Maybe even four or five athletes the whole time. But I feel like the mindset of some of the triathlon nature is like, or even, I guess I'll just say it, but like, it seems like the mindset of the judgment crowd or the peanut gallery is like, if you're not winning or if you're not on that podium, then why show up? Then why, like, because there's guys out there like Bradley Weiss who just even said like death before DNF. He said that on his post today. Like, there's even in golf, like, I just watched the Masters and there's like guys who finished 48. You don't hear about them, but people like still follow them and love them. They may not ever make the headline, or sometimes they might, but it's like we almost don't give enough credit to anybody unless they win. And I almost have a little bit of a problem with that sometimes because there's probably still equal amount of awesome characteristics, you know, maybe they just didn't get their break. Maybe they're fighting through some shit that is way more intense that the winners just never had to deal with. So I just feel like there needs to be more grace given to the rest of the field. And we never hear from the rest of the field. And so that's where I'm like, there's a bit of a void. And that's where some of these T100 races do feel a little bit empty to me. There's no crowd support. There's no energy. It's just athletes and a camera. And that's all they got.
Yeah, man, I hear you on that for sure. So I just made a social media post kind of about this on my Instagram and or Facebook. And kind of what spurred it was I was listening to a preview of this race, T100, on a podcast. And it's not a big podcast, but so it doesn't matter which podcast it was. But they were calling athletes in this race like bad or like not good. Like, obviously it was relative to the field, like, oh, this, you know, what it, he'll be bottom five or something. But I'm like, why? These are like 20 of the best athletes in the world, and you're like disrespecting some of them. Yeah. You know, like, I'm like, I think of Ben Canute, and I'm like, he's one of the best, you know, probably American triathletes, probably in the discussion for top 10, top 15 all-time American triathletes.
Yeah.
And you're saying, yeah, Olympian, like you're saying he's bad. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Have some respect.
And that's where I feel like some of the mindset has just been skewed by the social media, the popularity contest. And honestly, like anybody in their air conditioned room on their podcast or casting shade can always talk as much crap as they want. But I've been super Goggins lately, and like, nobody who ever talks shit about you is ever usually doing better than you. And that's what I've always noticed. Like, anyone who does talk shit is usually people who can never do it themselves. And it's so easy to speculate and just say something negative about you because it's easy, because they don't know you, because they never took a time to get to know what, why, and how you're doing what you're doing. So I think that there's more stories to be told, but there are only so many people who can get the spotlight. So sometimes that's just the way it goes. But anyways, let's move on from that. Back into the race. The women's race on the bike, you know, I didn't know if Ash was going to be able to pull it off, but she came in running like a track star. Lucy Charles Barkley obviously did so much work on the bike. Lucy Buckingham put her nose into the wind too. Like, really good women effort out there. Like, I love seeing it. What did you think?
Oh, man, Lucy Buckingham, unbelievable day. Just to have a wild card come in there. Awesome. And just like put it out there. And like she said, she's a pasty ginger from England or from Great Britain, and good for her. When I watched the race, I didn't have like the same perspective because I knew the results. So when they got off the bike and Lucy Charles was 5.5 minutes up, I was like, oh, you know, like she's going to get caught. So I already knew that was going to happen. So I didn't have that like, oh, is she going to hold on? And, you know, she looked great the whole way. And Lucy, when she's not quite at her best, a sign of that is that she finishes second. When Lucy's like getting fit, she finishes second. She is, and it just shows how good of a racer she is. But the way she races, it's that she needs to be fit to hang on and have that extra couple percent. But she's super reliable for a second place finish, because she's, the way she races, the way her talents stack up in triathlon just happened to put her that far ahead, and she's amazing. You know, you can always rely on her.
Yeah, she's always the front runner who wants to charge and set the pace and be the one out there. And so much respect to that level of enthusiasm for what you believe in yourself, because you're rolling the dice every time. Like, she's rolling the dice thinking someone behind her might have a worse day than her, and she's not willing to hold anything in reserve. She's just going to go out there and get it. And I love that. I think even when she swims, like, her stroke rate is just savage. Like, even some of the swimmers behind her just look more graceful. But Lucy Charles Barkley is up there just full send the whole time, does not give a shit. I think that's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. 90 stroke rate in, I guess this goes against what I was saying before, but she is pretty efficient. But 90 stroke rate, I timed it. She was at 90 strokes per minute. And we don't even know how warm it was. It was probably 90 degrees.
The women's race seems like it's almost a little bit easier to kind of see what might happen within those, you know, first characters of the swim. The men's race evolved in a way I would have never predicted. I think based off the swim, seeing Josh Amberger and Aaron Royal, even, you know, Brownlee always up there, you always think like, okay, those guys are going to come together. I was really wondering if Daniel Beckegaard, this was going to be his race. You know, we've all been waiting for him to just be, you know, the force that we always waited for Daniel Beckegaard to be. Unfortunately, it still didn't happen. Looks like Rudy had a bad day, 10th. And some of the other players, like, man, it's going to Singapore in the heat. It looked like I had no idea what was going to happen. I thought Brownlee, for some reason, was going to show us all what he was made of in terms of just being able to send one and finish it out. And it was heartbreaking to see him walk.
Yeah, I think he went in after he had that interview and he said that it was his ankle. When he hit the dismount line, I guess he had an ankle problem, went away and then came back. So I hope that's nothing serious. And because he looked like he was finally like in control, and it was obvious he was going to be maybe fifth or something, but I think if he's healthy, dude, nobody, I'm saying this now, this might be a hot take, nobody can touch him in San Francisco. It's going to be just full send. It'll be vintage Brownlee, because that course will be made for him.
Well, the whole time I was watching this T100 men's race, I was thinking, what if Jackson was in there? Like, Jackson just rode and smashed it with Sam, ran with Sam, and just finished off his heels at Oceanside. I think Jackson needs a bid at that Alcatraz race to see. He needs that wild card slot. He could pull a Yuri, you know? I know St. George coming up, we're going to see what he's really made of, but I really feel like he's going to be a contender at T100. They just got to give him that chance.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because last season, the races that mattered, he just had some people fuck shit up for him. And
well, he wasn't even far off. Like, he was like a bunch of 30s. I know. Like, he was still competitive as hell, and he's always been in the mix. So it's like,
but like the big days, like the US Open, Worlds, you know, he just missed last year. Like, he was sick or some shit was going on. And it was like, it was like those 2 days. If he hit on one of those 2 days, he'd probably be in the series. And like that, I feel like his ranking isn't quite indicative of where he's at. I think, man, even today in Singapore, I think Jack could have been a factor for sure.
Yeah. I think the heat would have played some variety of woes. Like, I mean, even Jason West, seeing him struggle like that, like, you're wondering, what's going to take to get this T100, you know, hopefuls that we've really thought were going to be the, I guess, the shining lights to make it happen. But either way, I did not watch Singapore last year. And I was definitely more impressed with the broadcast that they put together on this one from Miami. Like, it was 50% increase, and the tracker was a little bit weird for like placing versus times. Like, it didn't make sense. Like, Clark was second for a while, but it was really Lucy Buckingham. And then we had the men's race. I think the ticker went off for a while. So obviously some logistics are working on, but the funniest thing to me was like that, what is with this slow motion camera thing? They're like trying to stick to the slow motion. It's like the NBA, NFL, everybody, they just do that regularly. They don't have to like talk about the camera that they used for it. It's like, is this just a promo for this company? It's
100%.
It's so Bush League. I'm like, just show the clip. That's awesome. Yeah.
When that ticker, that like F1 ticker that they have on the left hand side of the screen is working, I really like it. And it has like the times, so you know where everyone's at all times, just like in an F1 race. I really like that percent heart rate thing. I know it's probably off. Guys probably just submit, and girls probably just submit random max heart rates and stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, that's something that maybe F1 could take from the T100, is put the driver's heart rates up on there. Cause that would be sweet to watch.
That would be epic. Like, just to see what happens during like an overtake or when you get DRS, like what happens, like that'd be cool. So actually, I think that's a good caveat. Like, T100 happened. It was awesome. That's the end of the day. You know, there's going to be another one no matter what. I want to talk about also how we can make triathlon more interesting. Because at the end of the day, there's still like, it's still swim, bike, run. and there's nothing that makes it interesting besides like, what are we working with within the confines of this sport, right? The human body is really the biggest limiter. You've got the environment that you're racing in, whether it's hot, hilly, cold, or something to that nature. And then what else do you have out there? Like, you could throw in weight, other stuff. Okay, so here's an idea I had, and I'll run through a few of them and let me know what you think. So let's just say there's a series, like T100 had a series, and every event was a different type of triathlon, right? And let's say two of those, maybe two or three of those, it was a mixed relay, right? And you had to draw straws to see who was going to be in your relay. That would be drama. That would give a lot to focus on. And even if they did that as a pre-show, maybe like you show up on Tuesday, you do the mixed relay on Wednesday, that's more something fun you can show. It might set some qualification standards for the next race. So what do you think about some sort of a drawing straws for relay positions that are going to be mixed in throughout the series to spice it up?
Is this just the long course version of Super Tri?
Well, I mean, look at what they're doing already. It's already basically in a 100K distance ITU race. The starting system, yep. The broadcast, the transition, it is all ITU. Nothing is different except for it's on a Eurosport.
Yeah. You know, I think doing like a sort of like qualifier type race, like you said, like that, maybe 2 days out, day out, that would be super cool. It's hard for me because, you know, I'm a purist at heart. I'm sure everyone that listens to the podcast knows I'm right down to the old school. I don't know. I don't know.
Perfect candidate for my antics then.
I would love to see it. I don't know. I think anything different, you know, I'd love to see, but I do like the classic just series, one distance, you know, everyone just goes out and it's different. We change the course based on the location, but the distance stays the same. But I would also be willing to listen to where every race has a different distance, you know, just like,
yes.
Yeah,
exactly. Like Miami, it's a super sprint. Now you've got three triple, like a Super League style, but it's still 100K. You've got maybe Singapore, which was like a shorter, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's 100K distance. And maybe Alcatraz is like, I don't know, like, what was I going to say?
Alcatraz, just the Alcatraz distance.
Yeah, or like one of them is longer. Like one of them's a long course, ITU long course. It's whatever, longer than 100K.
Yeah. Or even where you change up the ratios and stuff, you know, like maybe one racer swimming 3K, biking 60K, running 15K or something. Like it can be different based on the course. Just like, I mean, Alcatraz is such a great example of that. Like the distances don't make any sense, but the race is unreal because of where it is and how it is. You jump from a boat, you swim, you bike up and down, and you go to a park, do a loop and come back. And then
stairs,
the run is like,
you know? Stairs.
Yeah, and then the run there's stairs, and then you run on a beach, and then there's a sand ladder, and like, and then at one point you're like ducking under some, I don't even know what it was, like a bunker. You're like dunking under it for like 10 meters, and then you're running. It's like,
what if one point on the run there was like 10 fire hoses blasting across the road in different directions? You had to run through that, and then you were just getting fucked up by these fire hoses, and
yeah,
that,
or hey,
an obstacle,
hay bales, like they do at cross country, like this year, cross country worlds, they put the hay bales in like this awkward spot and everyone was trying to figure out how to get around them or over them or what.
But for real, what I was thinking, and to your point, which reminded me, is like, what if there was different distances within the series that would force every athlete, every heavy hitter to adapt to almost be more generalized in their ability to perform? Like it won't, every race, the swim won't matter as much because maybe the bike is going to be three times longer and like the bike's going to be better. Or maybe it's a 4K swim or something like that one time, to where Sam Long's even like 10 minutes off the bat. Like there's a lot of things I think that could make the sport a little bit more like not so much cheesy American Gladiator, but almost like, I know we're purists and swim bike run is fun, but like we've got to do something to make it more friendly to people who've never seen it before, because watching three athletes on a bike course for like a few hours, it just kind of people probably change the channel.
Yeah. You know, I think I'd have to take time and really think about this one, but I think there's something here for sure.
Well, I'm not done. Okay.
Okay.
Next one. And I think this is more realistic. Time bonuses and time penalties. All right. Like Nordic skiing, you've got to do penalty laps. If something happens, the penalties are not as race ending. Let's say time bonuses, like there's a preem. And if you're the first fastest bike lap, you get 10 seconds or you get 30 seconds plus time or a negative time at the end of your race. Like there could be time bonuses that could really dramatically shift how things are played out. Obviously the athletes who are racing need to know who's gotten what, but I think time bonuses and time penalties for either accomplishing or just missing some opportunities could be fun. And you wouldn't have to change the series, get the same distance, but it could dramatically, like, cause our biggest limiter, what we're all racing against is time. So how can you get more time? You can chug a athletic brew at mile 6 and you get 18 seconds, something like that. Like,
yeah. You get to cut the course. You get a short shoot.
Yeah, I think that's super fun. It's not really like, it's not against the core of this sport. And it does take a note from Super League, which short shoot does make a very dramatic experience. You know, dramatic race, even more dramatic sometimes.
Oh, 100%. There's some on Jersey, there were some epic races with the short shoot and sprint finishes between Vincent Louis and Johnny Brownlee.
Yeah.
Like vintage. Yeah. Classic, I should say.
But if the biggest limiter is the human body at all these races, and every athlete has 100 obstacles to get through to show up, I mean, travel is horrendous. Leaving your lifestyle at home is tough. The diet, the fatigue, coming in from another race. Like there's so many obstacles everyone's dealing with. Like, what if we also gave some opportunities to make it a little bit less detrimental to those athletes who might be in that back 10, who maybe could be in that top 10, just given the shot? Like, what if Ben Canute could have just been like, I knew I was going to get a minute time bonus, so I just stuck in there and it put me up into eighth place. Like, it might not affect the win, but it might affect the minor placings. And that's where I think there's more drama.
Yeah. Or like Mario Kart, we can like, yeah, 10 shells across the road.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's what I think.
I think there's something there for sure. Like, if you can bring in a bit of like that super try mentality into long course, I think we can make it a little more watchable for sure.
Or more exciting when you are watching it. Like, I watch it because I know some of these competitors. I've looked them in the eye and I respect the hell out of them. And to know that they're there is amazing. So I want to see if we can bring other people in to see what's going on and make our sport just, someone's like, I want to do that. That looks awesome. So, all right. That was a tangent that I just kind of thought of the other day. And Garrick, you were denied entry to Ironman Texas, which we talked about before. Are you bummed now? Are you like, I didn't really like Texas that much anyways.
You know, when one door, as they say at Bucky's, when one stall closes, another stall opens. And I'm super pumped to go to Taiwan. I think the conditions are going to be, watching this, I'm like, oh, F. The conditions are going to be so brutal. I've been looking at the temperature and stuff, but whatever. It's an experience. Morgan's coming with me. We're going to spend an extra week visiting and everything. But I'm definitely disappointed. I feel like I'm really back to where I was at, like, fitness-wise about 5 years ago. And I feel like I'm wasting a bit of my Ironman fitness doing a middle distance race, but I'm really excited. And I've never been to Asia. I've never got to race in Asia. And I don't even know who I'm racing because they don't put a start list out. So it's super exciting.
Well, You should. I don't know if you've reached out to. I know Robbie Deckard raced it last year. I think Lauren Brandon may have also. But either way, when I heard from Robbie that he said it was the hottest race he'd done in his entire life, like I was like, oh man. And then I heard you're doing it this year. I was like, man. I know that it's probably hotter than anything we've experienced. Maybe hotter than Cozumel.
Yeah. Well, Robbie did Philippines, not Taiwan. Oh,
sorry, my bad.
Yeah, but so I actually looked up that race because it's the weekend before, and I just assumed everyone doing that's probably going to do this one. They advertise that race as average air temperature 92 degrees, and you know if that's what Ironman's putting on the website, it's probably a good 10 degrees warmer than that.
Holy cow!
So I couldn't imagine. So I hope that race destroys a bunch of people, who think they're going to come over to Taiwan. But it's going to be by the time we hit the run, it'll be about 80 degrees to 85 and like 80% humidity. So it'll probably be close to Cozumel. And I'm hoping it feels like Cozumel because I'm like, that's hot, but it's like, I know I can like manage it.
Yeah.
Somewhat. But I think it's just going to be, I don't know. I'm just going to have fun and manage my effort and get to the finish.
It'll be an opportunity.
Be as competitive as I can. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm at the end of the day, you know, I'm doing this sport because I love it, and it's an experience. It's all an experience, and I'm going to get to tell my kids that I raced professionally in Asia in a triathlon. So,
what do we also think about that Valencia start list that has like 95 pro athletes? Like, why is it because access to being a pro? Professional athlete in Europe is even easier than in the United States or something? Like, it's why is the start list so
man, I almost went to that race. I was taken by surprise because I don't think it's a series race, right? I don't think it's an Ironman series race.
Not.
I think early season racing is just going to be like this from now on. I don't think that they're like just giving away too many pro cards or anything like that. Cause at the end of the day, there's still only 1,000 pros in the world. Like there's not that many, at least long course pros. There's about 1,000 registered with Ironman. I think everyone just, their seasons are just earlier now. And that's kind of just how it is. Like we touched upon with Texas, that race has always been super stacked, super busy. Really, it's only a 20% increase in registrations, and that's because it's part of the series this year. Same with Oceanside. It was really only an extra 15-20 pros that registered for it, like it's than most years.
The crazy thing about Oceanside is it's, you know, the hype was there, and the Pro Tri Series kicked off, and they did a great job. Like, I got to give kudos to Ironman for putting on, like, the energy felt palpable. Like, T100 just kind of feels empty in terms of energy. And, you know, thank God they've got Belinda and Jan because they make it actually amazing to listen to. But, like, the Pro Tri Series has the crowds. It has a lot more to build off of. And it felt really good to be there and to be part of that first race. But it on the course, it did not feel like there was that many guys. Like, I don't know. It didn't seem that crowded. Yeah.
I think also like I said, it's not that many more guys. Like we're freaking out because there's 80 guys, but how many guys race Kona? Isn't it like 65 or 70 guys that race Kona? Like it's not that much more.
Yeah. I don't know.
Also I think everything's just gonna stabilize. This was the first month, everyone was going nuts with this series. I think there's guys that are going to Texas, guys that went to Oceanside that are going to realize pretty quickly, like, I'm not going to make any money in this series. I don't know why I'm chasing this series. This ranking means nothing. And they're just going to kind of change their race plans. And like, I don't expect Maine to have 70.3 Maine to have 80 guys on it or anything like that. And Ironman Chattanooga, Ironman Penticton, I can't see 80 guys signing up for those races either.
I hope not, because I'm trying to get – I want to go back to Chattanooga. I had a great race there in 2019. I'd like to go back and have another good one. So, you know, there's the thing is, it's like I don't think they're broadcasting anything but the Pro Series now, right?
Yeah, I don't believe so.
Which is fine. It takes a lot of the pressure off, and it makes it like old school style. But
Yeah, and it limits the amount of motos in the bike packs too, so.
Seems like things are kind of coming together. The season is in full blast. St. George is in 2 weeks ish. It's the 14th of April today. I'm really excited to see what happens at St. George, honestly. Like, I have a good headspace, and this is like one of those races for me that I want to finally make a stamp on. I've done it enough times, and I live on the damn course and ride it every day. I really want to make an imprint on what I can do while I'm, getting after it. So Jackson, I hope absolutely wins it. He's always done well at this race. I don't know, I know Lionel has too. Sam, I know is probably on the edge of if he's going to race here. Oh, let's talk again real quick. T100, Sam Long last out of the water, 4 minutes down, second place. The dude is unfucking real. Sam Long is seriously not a human. Like, he's
I
crazy.
know. The only guy that looked like the heat had no effect on him. Like he dunked at the finish line. He's chatting to everyone's half dead and he's just chatting away at the end of the race. And I don't know, man. I don't know if he is human. Like I understand that physiologically he's tall, he has long limbs, which is surface area to weight is basically the equation for performing well in the heat. So he's got that going for him, but like I couldn't believe it.
Even
I
in
truly couldn't believe it.
Cozumel, when it was like racing on the sun, he's just like no big deal. I've never seen him be fazed by the heat. Meanwhile, everyone else, me included, is just like sucking on a piece of ice like it's going to save our lives.
Yeah.
My God. So yeah, we got some good stuff coming up. I'm really interested to see, when is Texas? Is it next weekend?
April 27th. Yeah, so not this weekend coming up, but the next weekend.
Okay, so that'll be fun to watch that race. Like, I'll be tapering almost for St. George, right? What? So yeah, it's the 14th is today. It's next sun Saturday, and then we've got St. George the following Saturday. So we've got two good weekends of stellar Ironman racing. Alcatraz is what, the weekend after St. George, right? Or is it 2 weekends after? Like,
No. Alcatraz is in June.
oh wow, so there's some good amount of time. I wonder why. I would have thought Tamara might have come to do this race, but maybe she just didn't have the best time here before. So anyways, that's what's up. Garrick's in Taiwan. We get the rest of the crew. No one's coming to St. George but me, Jackson, and Mark. I don't know when anyone else is racing. Oh, Leslie's doing Texas, so we gotta root for Leslie in Texas.
Yeah, root for Leslie. So we're racing. So my race goes off. It will be 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 26th, but it's
Nice.
7 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. on the 27th. So I'll be finishing up while they're probably w waking up or going to bed. Going to
Nice.
bed.
Yeah, those time zones are terrible. Yeah, you should use, there's some cool time zone hoppers that I know pro cyclists use that kind of
Oh yeah.
get you aligned with a time zone weeks before you get there. It'll suggest when you should start going to bed and adjust your routine.
Okay.
So
What's it called? Or what is it?
I don't remember. I might still have it. Something time zone. Let me see if I've got it. I don't. But look into it. Just Google time zone
Okay.
acclimatization app or something like that.
Okay.
It'll probably pop up
Oh,
some
it's
good.
an app. Okay.
Oh yeah, it's an app.
Yeah. All right.
It'll even
Cool.
tell you
Yeah. Well,
when you should take melatonin.
yeah. Oh, nice. Unfortunately, I got to work Tuesday and Wednesday, which kind of throws everything off, but and Friday, really, but not really. So, like, I can't get fully into the time zone. I've been trying to work out later, but yeah, I might do it Taylor Reed style where I just, when I get there, I just don't acknowledge the time zone at all and sleep in the middle of the day and train in the middle of the night. And that way race comes 7 p.m. my time, which is when I'm flying over here.
I did that when I went to Beijing, and I think I arrived maybe on a Wednesday for a Sunday race. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I have never experienced such brain fog in my entire life. Like, ooh. During the 2 days before the race, like, I was good from like 6 a.m. to about 1 p.m. So it finally set in. I was fine between that period of time, but I would wake up at like 3 a.m. absolutely starving. So make sure that you have so many snacks in your room, because you're going to wake up fucking wanting to eat everything. And all they had was like steak flavored Pringles, which were great. But I needed more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good tip. That's a good tip.
I think there's gotta be like something you can take supplement wise, probably ketones. Those have gotta be the number one thing to fix.
Yeah. It's gotta be the ketones. That's it.
All right. Well, I don't really have anything else, buddy. Do you?
No, man. Cool. Hey, good episode. Way to plan. I saw you had your notes.
Yeah. I'm always,
but let's, something. Yeah. Hey, let's make triathlon interesting again.
Yeah. I think we just need to have a water balloon fight in T2.
Heck yeah. Oh, I'd be so down for that.
And if you get hit, you get 5 second penalty.
Yeah. And if you hit them, you get their 5 seconds.
That's it. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on. We'll have another episode. Hopefully, Ellie Salthouse is supposed to be coming in from Singapore to St. George to hang out. And I would like to get her and Zach on the podcast for the next episode to talk about what they've been going on in Australia. They're doing big things. Zach's got a new bike shop going on. Anyways, they're a lovely couple. We'll try to get them on, because we had them on, you know, maybe 5-6 months ago. It'd be nice to catch up.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think it was longer than that, actually.
Probably. I have no time for recollection. And check out our YouTube channel. We've been putting out some good content. We'll have an Oceanside vlog coming out. And Garrick, it's up to you to make a vlog for your trip. Just telling you right now.
Okay.
You need to make a vlog. So even if it's phone vlog, I don't care. You got to do it. We need to see what you're going through over in Taiwan so we can talk about an RTS YouTube.
All right.
Tell Morgan.
We'll get some video then. Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, stay fresh, stay chiseled, tell your mom I love her, and have a good race, Garrett.
All right, we'll see you, bud.
Peace out.
Peace
out. Nice. I got ish to do, flying through the sky in my parachute, dancing on the couch like I'm Tommy Cruise on a one-man mission trying to see it through.